winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and about 15 to the top of the hour, and Rich Migliore is going to join us. And, of course, he got a full day of racing action in New York and television. So, sure, I'm assuming they stayed. I don't think he went back. I'm almost positive he stayed downstate. And, of course, not just Mig, but all of the racetrack community Ranger fans, you know, who are, they can be tough to take, let's be honest. Grenig, right? Grenig, who else? There's a whole bunch. They love the Rangers. And so tonight, as it happens, I watched the game on Saturday night, which was quite good. And there's Rich Migliore. Mig, I was just killing time, and I was saying how you're certainly ready for a race day and Big Apple Showcase and a Pick Six carryover. But I know you're thinking about the Rangers tonight.
Oh man, I'm very fortunate today, Steve. I'm done about 3:15, 3:30-ish, and I will be heading northbound. We'll be home in plenty of time for the game. I have a really good feeling they're going to do it because of the way they played the other night. But, you know, a lot going on. Today, woke up. Now, you're going to laugh at me, Steve. I'm cleaning up my little cottage because I like when I get back here Thursday that everything's in its place. I just vacuumed. Do you believe that? I hope Carmella's not listening. woke up this morning and I was looking at stuff on my iPad, and it said, it was May 30th. 34 years ago today was the first time I broke my neck right here at Belmont Park on a Memorial Day card. You know, because it's not always May 30th Memorial Day.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I just, something that jumped in my head, and then I started scrolling through some old articles about it. Man, I forgot how hard it was.
Well, how many people phrase that by saying the first time they broke their neck?
Yeah, I know.
Right? It's like, first time? What do you mean first time?
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing was, like, I actually don't remember. The last thing I remembered, I never remembered going to the jockey's room that day. I never remembered going to the paddock. Never remember getting on the horse. I think it was like Saturday was like the first little glimpses of what I could remember from that whole weekend. And I only got that back because someone said, don't you remember you met me in the paddock? And they started talking, and it kind of, you know, sparks the memory. Because, I mean, I was knocked into oblivion for a while.
Well, I wish you luck tonight. And that game, as a former hockey broadcaster, I can tell you that game was over when the Rangers scored the first goal after the Canes had put on tremendous pressure on the other end, had maybe three good scoring chances, and the Rangers went right back down the ice and scored. That is one of those wind out of the sails type goals. And and then they scored again. I mean, they I know the game was a little close heading in, you know, we were 3-1 and 4-2 at a certain point, but I never at any point thought the Carolina was winning that game.
Well, it's kind of like when you're riding a speed horse and you're on the lead and you're going properly and a guy kind of, you know, ranges up a little bit and you let out a notch and take, you know, another length on him, and then he tries you again. You take it, like, every time you are have an answer for that little rally, it takes the wind out of the sails. It discourages the other horse. And it's exactly. Kind of the similar situation with the hockey game the other night. Every time they would put on a press, Rangers would weather it, and even if they got scored upon, they'd come back and answer. You know, I love this team because there's just such a blend of youth and you know, skill, and then there's a certain amount of toughness. Like, I think they have all the components to be a Stanley Cup winning team. Maybe it's not this year, but it makes you excited about watching them and you know, what the future could bring. I do feel like if we get through tonight, Tampa's a good matchup for us. And I feel like we could probably go to the Cup. West Coast teams are very tough. Colorado's, I mean, they're just big, fast, strong. But when they got through the Pittsburgh series, Steve, I said, well, at least I get at least four more games of hockey. So I got seven out of it. So if they get through tonight, I'll say the same thing. At least I get four more games of hockey.
Well, yeah, it's a good way to look at it. I don't have an interest in with these teams that are remaining, although I will say I would like to see Edmonton. Wouldn't mind seeing the Oilers advance. It'd be just good for the Canadian set of teams that, you know, be encouraging for them. The Canadian squads have, you know, the Canadians' run was great. It's always best that when you get a Canadian, one of the Canadian teams in the finals. That and any matchups, any Stanley Cup matchups between original six teams. Those are two formulas for great. I mean, Stanley Cup hockey is you know, at every series is, well, you know, there is no playoff sport. I mean, you can have playoff games in the NFL that are lopsided and awful. Every other sport, you can have baseball, you know, World Series games that are boring. Stanley Cup playoff hockey from the first round, there's just nothing like it, Rich. There's nothing that compares to it.
No, the intensity, the ferocity, yeah. It's like a whole new season. You know, the rigors of getting through, you know, you have to win 16 games, right, to win the Stanley Cup out of, you know, potentially 28 games. You know, it's like a whole nother season, or if I'm doing my math properly. But anyway, I got, you know, I was so lucky. Jay Oringer, owner, great guy, good friend, owns Petey Bianchi. He took me to the Game 7 Pittsburgh Rangers, which we won in overtime. Didn't have a voice. That's when I couldn't come on, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so like to be there for that, and then what they were doing, and I've been communicating with Eddie Maple because he lives down in Carolina, And I was chiding him, like, all the years in New York, you're not a New York fan, but he still is. But so it's a lot of fun. Got to hang out with Nick Fatillo at the game, who loves the horses and, you know, owned horses. And we had a great time with him. He was chiding me for my raincoat that I wear. He said, "What is that, your grandfather's raincoat? It's time you got to go buy a new freaking trench coat." Like, he goes, "Every time I see you on air with that raincoat, I'm throwing stuff at the TV."
Fatillo. I'll avoid any Fatillo conversation. Because I can bring it all the way back to college days. So with him, but
okay, all right. Well, listen, I really went to give a talk at Walk Hill Correctional Facility because we have, you know, TRF has a herd there, and
sure.
Talk to the prisoners and bring them wind pictures. That Adam Cognese is nice enough. I've got the list of horses. Any horse that is there, he might be 20 years old. If they had wind pictures, he gave me wind pictures. So a guy who's grooming this old horse, hey, here's a picture of him when he won in Saratoga when he was a 3-year-old, or Belmont, or Aqueduct. And, you know, and they really, really appreciate it. And, you know, kind of give this really great talk. And so I started talking with one of the guards about hockey. And a guy comes over, maybe a slightly taller than me, but built like, I mean, he was just as, you know, ripped, shredded guy. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, my first cousin played for the Rangers." I said, "Who's that?" "Nick Fatillo." he was a guest there.
That's funny.
Yeah.
We had him in Hartford, you know, when I started with the Whale, so. Saw plenty of it to you. The speaking of Tenacious, a perfect segue, and Will to Win, as you referenced, Rich. I asked you this morning early about your encounters with Lester Piggott. So let's start there.
Yeah, so Lester had come in to ride a horse. You know, the schedule used to be quite a bit different, Steve. It was they would have the Turf Classic in September. At one point, and then the Man of War after it. And I was riding that very good turf horse for Sally Bailey, Win, and gave him a perfect ride in the Turf Class. It could not have gotten a nice trip inside out. You know, you had to kind of time your run well with him. And Lester blew by me on a Buckram Oak course. I believe his name was Noble Fighter. Like, you know, just no excuse, just smoked us, you know. And we came back for the Man of War, and all I keep thinking is, how can I possibly beat this horse? Like, you know, I couldn't get a better trip, and he just sprinted by me, you know, inside the eighth pole. So I had put it in my head, I was just going to, wherever he was, I was going to be. And he was on the fence going to the first turn, and there was not room for two horses, and I put Win in there. Win was big, big imposing horse. And, you know, Lester kind of, he had a little different way of speaking because I guess he had a hearing issue, and he kind of, and I, you know, I'm not coming out of here, right? We went a little further, and I was like, I'm not coming out of here, and I could hear him brushing the hedge. And finally, we got midway down the backstretch, and he got very clear: "Get the F off of me." So he went from, and me not quite understanding or knowing what he wanted, which wasn't going to happen. And then ultimately he came out of the spot, and I took ownership of the spot and wound up winning the race. His horse subsequently didn't fire, so I don't think it really, you know, played a role in the outcome. But we came back to the room, and he just keeps looking at me and looking at me, and I'm going, like, this old man going to want to punch me or something? Like, you know, and I'm saying this with all due respect. The guy, he's the greatest jockey, arguably, of all time, right? And he came over, and I was kind of ready for anything. He stuck out his hand, and he just gave me a nod, and he left. And I never felt prouder. You know, like he got
it. That's great.
Yeah, he knew where my head was at. You know, I was 21 years old, and here he is, this, you know, bigger-than-life legend. Mike Keough, great horse trainer, great horseman, got friendly with Mike when he was assistant to Roger Atfield before he went on his own, and that was his favorite race rider. And, you know, I had told him that story, and you know, he loved it because, you know, to him, Lester was just a whole another level. But, you know, it's sad that he's gone, but what a life. What an incredible story that he wrote. And I love looking at him, see the pictures of him 12 years old riding his first winner and what have you. And the lineage of his family and just, you know, how strong and important they were in racing for so many years. I mean, in England and Europe. I just, I'm glad I have that memory of that race with him. Did ride in an international jockey challenge with him as well. Got a great picture. Peter Krovich, Joe Hirsch's cousin, is a neighbor of mine. And he went over, I went over and he gave me some stuff that he had of Joe's. And one's a great picture of Shoemaker and Lester, probably mid-70s. And it's just a great photograph. I have it. I you know what? You'll be here next week. I'm going to bring it out. I want you to see. It's a very cool picture.
Oh, cool. Very much. Yeah, absolute.
Yep. So, no, it's, you know, really good stuff. Communicated with Angel Cordero yesterday. He was saddened by it. You know, he obviously had experiences with Lester. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is we're all getting older. You know, I was thinking about this the other night. You know, Eddie Brown and how important he was in my life and him passing, you know, not that long ago. And it just seems like, you know, it just keeps coming now in waves.
You know, you can't stem that tide. One thing that's amazing to me, actually, as there's certain passings, is that a lot of the heroes, you know, that my youth, sports heroes, you know, from the late 60s and into the 70s in particular, the reality that they're really not that much older than we are, that's been a revelation to me. You know, suddenly, I'm going to be 63, and you know, some of these guys were only like 8-9 years older than me. I'm sort of realizing. I don't know why I wasn't more cognizant of it when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, that they were only, you know, 19, 20, 21, give or take.
Isn't that kind of like your child's mind's eye? You know, like, yeah. Every now and then I'll make a little pilgrimage back to where, you know, I grew up early, you know, when I was younger in Brooklyn. And I'll get out and walk around like I, you know, still have business walking around there. And, just the walk from my house to what was the little Irving's independent grocery store on Avenue T, and what a long walk I thought that was when I was a kid, and it's not a very long walk at all. Like, everything's smaller, right? And then just what you're saying about age and time, a guy came up to me in Saratoga several years ago. We looked, to me now, about the same age, and he told me that when I was an apprentice, I was 16 in Saratoga, I gave him a pair of goggles, and he'd been a lifelong racing fan ever since. Now, he was 10 years old when I gave him those goggles, so it was only 6 years. To him, I must have seemed like, you know, a much older guy, right? Because I'm in the show, if you will. And you know, you look up to people, and it is pretty amazing. The gap narrows as we get older.
Well, I appreciate it. That's a tremendous story, and I imagine did you get a chance? I'm trying to think about when the news. Yeah, the news broke early in the morning. Did you talk about yesterday on the show? Did you talk about Piggott?
You know, we didn't. I know there is you know, plans to do that today. You know, the rundowns, and our shows are so packed, Steve, and especially when you're doing two tracks, and it's hard to get like even all of our on-air talent in at a timely fashion. And there's so many moving parts that these guys and girls behind the scenes that are doing the rundowns, they're working for hours to make sure we can fit in all elements. So when something new breaks, it's really hard to, you know, fit it in like on the fly. It's really much more intense than people realize as far as the timing of things. You know, literally on the rundown, it's down to seconds, you know, 45 seconds here, 30 seconds there, a minute there, you know, and, you know, sometimes, you know, there's always egos in TV and some people feel a little shorted, like when they don't get to get their full thoughts in. But, it, you know, it's just so many moving parts. I remember when John Rotz passed, you know, the next day we couldn't get anything, like anything meaningful. You don't want to just brush over it, you know. And I got a couple phone calls from, you know, friends, racetrackers that were upset about it. And I was trying to explain that to them. And then, of course, you know, ultimately when we could do it better and properly, you know, and more of a fitting tribute. So, you know, it just wasn't something you want to, you know, like fit in and not have a good segue into it or really have any conversation about it.
Well, we'll watch for it. Let me touch on a couple of thoughts from the weekend, and yeah, kind of weighted in with just the stake yesterday, the Clement Big Invasion, that Chardy Party's performance. I thought on Saturday, pretty good follow up to the, you know, the first out maiden win, and in a lot of ways, you know. I guess there's two ways, Rich, to look at Highly Motivated's win. Did he gut it out? You know, after the tangled beginning, I thought it was okay. But I also thought Stage Raider, who went wide, I thought that that he acquitted himself well. Both of those 4-year-olds for Chad look like they can keep aspiring to bigger and better things.
Yeah, I actually think that's one of those races we're going to look back on and realize just how good it was, how quality laden it was. I thought it was very good efforts. You know, it's funny. You talk about Highly Motivated. I don't know. Like sometimes I think people have unrealistic ideas of how or what horses are supposed to do. I look at some races sometimes when a horse wins, but then they had to gut it out, as more of a positive than if they were, you know, dazzling and one off, you know, by many lengths, because you find out more about a horse's character when they have to reach down. They got to find more. They've got to find a way to win. Kind of much like my New York Rangers team, finding ways to win. you know, so like, again, I kind of look at it a little different. I guess over the years you ride so many horses that, man, they break their maiden and they're so impressive and you go, wow, you know, what is this? And then they get really looked in the eye. A horse, like, you know, stares them down and they can't shake them off and they'll wilt. And then you get the one that he gets eyeballed, you know, and he stares them back down and goes back for them. That's what defines good horses. Horses that have more desire, have more determination, more grit, overcome adversity. That, you know, that's what defines athletes in general. And we're talking specifically about horses, but isn't that what defines human athletes as well?
Sure.
And that's
absolutely.
The intangible, right? You know, people can go to, you know, 2-year-old in training tails and see a lot of horses that can go very fast. Will that horse, you know, you can't determine by watching that if that horse has that drive, that fight, that what we refer to as heart, but I think there's a lot more that goes into that. It's a certain intelligence. You know, good horses are intelligent. Good horses understand, you know, their job. And I've ridden a lot of horses over the years that could fly, and they just didn't have the mind to stay settled and focused on racing. And, I mean, you talk about Clement's colt that won the Paradise Creek yesterday, right? His name again, Steve?
Big Invasion.
Big Invasion. I was going to say Big Motivation. I would have sounded good. Here's a horse that's very, very fast. What is making him better? The fact that now he's using his speed when Joel Rosario wants him to use it. All good horses possess speed. It depends on how they learn to use that speed, dole it out, meet it out, if you will, and listening to a rider's cues. And you know, go back to the William Walker, where you know he settled in behind horses. He got in a little tight, a little intimidated. He shied a little bit, but then he turned it on when Doyle needed him. And now yesterday, he was even more settled and do it 7/8. Now, listening to Chris Stopp, I don't think he wants to go further than 7/8 at this point, but I think he'll ultimately be a good miler. And why? Because he is settling, and he's using that speed later in the race as opposed to early in the race. Wesley's horse, Asymmetric, blitzed the first quarter mile. So he was a flat runoff. I mean, you go back and watch that. You want to talk about 21-4 and Irad's in the dashboard and his ears are flat to the back of his neck. I was shocked he hung on for second because usually horse just dumps all their blood cells that first quarter of a mile when they run like that in such a frantic, counterproductive way. So I thought he was amazing that he ran second, but that's what's making Big Invasion is going to make him the best he can be.
Well, today, Rich, looking ahead, I'm going to handicap this with Nick Tamaro later in the hour, but we've got a hat full of the Big Apple Showcase races, and a lot of them fill out everything but the Mount Vernon, fill out this carryover sequence. And did you do anything jump off the page at you as you looked at this card?
Honestly, not really, Steve. It's just really competitive. We kind of did a preview with Some Like It Hot Brown, who just does look like he has a huge pace advantage. There's not a tremendous amount of early speed, and he's going to be fresh. He should be on the lead, at least it appears on paper in that race. I'm actually heading over there now. I got to we do our production meeting. That's why I was later with you today on the phone, but. I'm going to head over there now, and I'm actually, like I said, I'm done the early shift, so I'm not going to be much help to you and your legion of fans as far as handicapping.
No problem. We got Nick coming, and enjoy the first portion of the card, and get home, and you probably got, what do you got? They got little sausage and meatballs for maybe to watch the game with. What's waiting for you?
You know we're going to have a proper dinner. And then, now since I don't ride anymore, there will be proper snacks, and I'll be set up in my chair with my chihuahua on my lap.
I love it. The chihuahua. Which one is that? The chihuahua.
Tino.
When we got him,
My daughter's dog, who has now become my dog, I wanted to name him Zuccarello for the New York Ranger, who was, on the Rangers at the time, plays with Minnesota Wild now, because he's a very small guy, small in stature, and that got voted down, and we were watching, The Godfather on Christmas Day, and Santino, and Gabby said, that's it, Santino, we'll call him Tino, because he's tiny, so he's Santino, we call him Tino, and now he's my dog, and he's pressed beyond depression when I'm not home. Carmelo says at night he sits by the back door, and every once in a while you hear these little sighs coming out of him, like, where is he?
Enjoy. Good luck tonight with the Broadway Blues, and we'll talk next week. I'll be with you next week. We'll do it live at the track apron.
I look forward to it, Steve, and we're having dinner next week. No compromise for doing that. So.
No. It's a deal.
All right, more than one. Have a great day. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Rich Migliori, folks. MIG 4450. And perfect situation for him. So he gets to do the early part of the card. And that means we'll look for Andy later. And we'll go through it with Nick in a little bit. That sequence. Johnny is going to join us next. Johnny D. And that sequence, again, if you haven't looked, starts at 3:03. 3:03 with the fifth race, fifth through tenth. You got the first level allowance, all state bred action today again. Long on the turf, our favorite angle. The can't be beat when looking for prices. Long on the grass for state breds. Then it goes to the critical eye, which is the fillies and mares going 1 mile on the main. 7 furlong Bowery for the 3-year-old fillies. The 7 furlong Mike Lee for the boys. And then the Kingston. The boys long on the grass, group of 8 there. And it closes out with 7 furlong on the turf, maiden special weight. Full field, too, of 12. And we'll get scratches before Nick joins us. Right now, Johnny D, another, you know, Nick on a holiday Monday is a tradition. Johnny, typically on holidays, is usually a pushback because he's typically at Cape May. And sure enough, there was Cape May involved for Johnny and Gail. So everything's right with the world again, Johnny.
It is for me. I mean, I'm having a great weekend here. The weather has been absolutely fantastic. I hit the beach a little bit, hit a few golf balls, been eating like a king, had a few adult beverages, played some races. If there's anything else in life, I don't know what it is.
Sweet. Nice. Well, we've had the kids here the whole weekend, and it's been really kind of humorous. I mean, because you're nonstop, and I know for you, when your granddaughter comes in from Hong Kong with your daughter, I mean, it's got to be super intense because you really treasure. For us, you know, we get to see Lennon and now the baby Cal pretty regularly, but this has been nonstop, and I've cooked. Let me tell you, I have cooked for like an army starting Friday. We got a couple of days worth of leftovers now with everybody heading back to Rochester and to Brooklyn. But had a family, a very nice family weekend here.
Well, it's great to hear. As you say, my reunion with my granddaughter is going to be special because I held her when she was a baby. Because my daughter and her husband visited California from Hong Kong, and we flew to California to greet them, and then COVID hit, and we haven't seen them since because it's so difficult to get to Hong Kong. So we're looking forward to there's a glimmer of hope that possibly this summer. They'll make a trip to the U.S. and we'll get to. I just want to hug that baby. That's all. I just want to hug her. She's 3 now, and we, of course, through the brilliance of modern technology, we've been able to do calls and video calls, and of course, we get the videos to see her grow up. But man, I can't wait to hug her. It'll be a big, big moment for me.
Sweet. Well, I thought there had been a second. I didn't realize that that's just the one. It's just been the one visit that you guys have had. So that.
Yeah, she was an infant.
That's tough. Yeah.
A couple months old at the time. Yeah. Of course, we took her to Del Mar racetrack.
You wasted no time.
No, we have pictures of her in the paddock. There's a video of me rocking her. She's kind of fussy, and I'm rocking her to kind of get her to settle down. And Trevor Denman is in the background calling your ace.
That's great.
So, we didn't waste any time.
Well, we won't waste time. Further regaling everybody with our grandchildren, although I could go on a little bit. I'll ask you too, because it's an obvious theme at this point. And certainly you brushed with enough you know, legendary riders. I mean, Lafitte Pinkai's name came up. You handled Sandy Hawley's book for years. What's your Lester Piggott reflection?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I listened to Nick earlier on the show, Nick Luck, talking about Lester Piggott. And, of course, he didn't have many personal recollections. And I don't have any personal recollections of Lester Piggott either. You know, he did come back and ride, but that was in Europe. And, you know, things were so different back then. Like when Steve Coffin, who was a sensation, as I was, you know, entering the racing industry and becoming interested in racing, he was a sensation a couple of years before that. And then when he left the U.S. and went to Europe to ride, you might as well have gone to another world, really. I mean, as far as, you know, we didn't have the coverage. You have to imagine, you have to understand that things weren't the way they are now. They were very different. Even in this country, I remember Bobby Frankel going by his barn in the morning when I was a jock's agent, and he would talk about the New York races, and he would say, oh, you know, Cordero did this, or, you know, did you see what happened? And I was looking at him like, how is this guy seeing the New York race? Because they weren't on TV. But he was an early adapter of satellite television. And so he had a dish. And he was getting, I don't know what show. Was it the Harvey Pack show or whether it was the Irish
Thoroughbred
show?
Thoroughbred Action?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was watching that. So he had his finger on the pulse in New York. Of course, that's where he was originally from. So he loved that racing and he was very familiar with it. But that's how, and dishes were not common. They were new. They were something, you know, only wealthy people had dishes. You had to have room for a dish and at that time, and, you know, it was a big deal. They were expensive and hard to install and whatnot. Anyway, the other thing Franklin used to get me, he would come into the barn in the morning and he would say, did you watch Nightline last night? And I'm thinking, Nightline? Nightline comes on at like 11:30 or something. Yeah,
yeah.
11 or 11:30. Yeah. How's this guy watching Nightline? Now, he liked it, you know, I mean, hell, we go. If you stop by his office, you'd end up talking about 87 different things. You talk about sports, you talk about politics, you talk about news, whatever current events, whatever's going on, and he was up on everything. So he'd say, oh, yeah, they had this, that, and he'd tell you what the show was about. And this went on for a while, and I'm thinking to myself, how the hell does this guy stay up late at night like that? I know he's at the barn early in the morning. He must sleep like in the afternoon. He must sleep for 3 or 4 hours. How's he doing this? And finally, one day, I said to him, I said, Bobby, how do you watch Nightline at 11:30 at night and it's over at like 12? How do you and still get up in the morning? Hey, you moron. I got the dish. I watch it on the dish. It comes on it. Comes on at 8 o'clock. It's on 11 in the east. I watch it at 8 o'clock, you moron. But we weren't used to that. So anyway, getting back to Lester Piggott. You moron. And he put another word in there right before moron. It begins with an F and then ends with a G. Anyway, our paths never crossed, which, you know, obviously all the guys that Nick mentioned, I know he was off the top of his head mentioning other great riders. And there was a name he didn't mention that, you know, as he mentioned names, he mentioned Lafitte, and he didn't mention Shoe.
No.
And I know that Shoemaker was probably a little bit before Nick's time, too. You know, these guys that are a little bit before your era, you know about them, but you didn't know them. You know, obviously Nick can talk about the Torii, you know, from beginning to end because he was around for much of Frankie's career. But, you know, Shoemaker, when you mention Pinkai, you have to kind of almost mention Shoemaker because, and Lafitte will readily admit this, Shoe was such an influence on him. Just like Nick talked about how Lester Piggott influenced so many riders that came immediately after him or along with him since he re-rallied and rode again. But in his heyday, the guys that came along and after him, he influenced them. And these guys, they not only influenced the guys they rode with, but they then influenced the game. And I think Nick kind of touched on that, is that they changed the way certain things were done in the game. And anybody who can leave a mark like that on their industry is, you know, has to be held in very high esteem. And certainly Piggott is one of those guys. But, you know, the only place that I might have, you know, crossed paths or been involved with him at all would have been Breeders' Cups, or if he came to ride a horse for Charlie Winningham, but Shoemaker had those mouths, you know, like a European horse that was coming over for a big race, like the Yellow Ribbon. We used to get some European influence. The San Juan Capistrano, the big races at Santa Anita would sometimes get that European influence, longer races. But Breeders' Cups, really, California Breeders' Cups are the only time we might have crossed paths, and we didn't. I don't think he was, you know, riding too much at that time. You guys talked about his comeback, and that race, that day you guys were talking about was Aqueduct, I think, or was it Belmont?
Belmont. Where did I put my list? I printed out four pages because I was curious. The U.S., I'm going to try to find out how many times he rode in the U.S., and I may have to go to the racing manuals for this. But he did win the DC International three times, 68 on Survivor, 69 on Caribus, and in 1980 on Argument. I imagine he rode in others, and you would think that he probably visited Atlantic City and rode a UN or two, and that might even go back, you know, back toward Roundtable era. So I'd be very curious. I can remember. I mean, obviously, we talked about this 1990 Cup, and, you know, it's one of the most difficult days for anybody that's ever been at a racetrack. And at the same time, seeing him was a big deal. And being able, you know, knowing you were going to see Lester Piggott. I distinctly remember. I also distinctly remember betting It's All Greek to Me. I've got my notes. I got my notes somewhere in this house, in my files of stuff. I have my note cards because I lived in Manhattan on 35th Street, and I had these note cards with my name and address on them, and they were all my bets for that Breeders' Cup. And I think I still did okay, but I remember, I know I bet It's All Greek to Me. That I remember.
Well, I think that's the same day. I was there, actually. I had Corey Black's book. He was a jockey in California-based, Kenny Black, who
sure.
I also had.
Of course.
I also had Kenny Black for a couple of years, and had Corey for a couple of years, and Corey was riding Flying Continental for Jay Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
And Flying Continental had won the jockey called Gold Cup in the race before the Breeders' Cup, in the start before the Breeders' Cup. So I remember I was there distinctly that day because I had some future wagers in Vegas on Flying Continental to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. And if he would have won that day, I would have made more money than the jockey or the trainer on that race. But it was not to be. What a nice horse he was. He was a nice little horse. Yeah. Flying Continental. And by the way,
pulling up, yeah.
By the way, just as long as we're talking about this, there's a trainer who was an excellent trainer who never really got much of it. Never really got many shots with good horses, but the ones he got, he made the most of them.
Yeah.
Jay Robbins. Awesome trainer. But anyway, Flying Continental.
There it is, Flying Continental.
Yeah.
11.
So it was funny because actually Will was with me that day. My two best friends from Philly, of course, I flew in from California, and my two best friends from Philly, we were all going to the races. We were going to go to the Belmont that day. So I flew in, and the airline was Continental. And the hotel that we had stayed at, was there a Continental, or is there still a Continental in New York? It was some kind of Continental, and that was the name of the hotel we were staying at. And then...
Well, the Intercontinental.
Intercontinental, okay. And yeah. Then, where not my current wife. It was my second wife, and we were getting her coat out of the car, and the tag on the coat said Continental. And so, of course, Will and my buddy and I, we got enveloped in all this. You know, this had to be that he was going to win. I mean, there's no way he's not going to win. I mean, he just won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. There's no way he can't. You know, he's going to win the Breeders. I think he might have gone off around 5-1, maybe 6-1, something like that.
480.
Okay. And
there you
so
go.
Of course we unloaded, and I was all in already because if he wins, of course I'm going to make the 8 jockeys and. And then I'd already bet him in Vegas, which was something I like to do. I like to tell people that I was going to Vegas, and then take if they wanted to future bet anything, horsemen. I would tell horsemen I'm going to Vegas. Do you have anything you want to future bet for the breeder stuff? So one morning at Del Mar. That summer, Doc Robbins was in the stall working on a horse at Jay Robbins' barn. And Doc Robbins was Jay's father and one of the directors at Del Mar. And he was working on a horse, and I went by the barn. I said, hey, Doc, I said, you know, this horse is like 30-1 to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. I'm going to Vegas. You want to get anything on him? He said, what? I said, this horse is like 30-1 to win the Breeders' Cup. Wait a minute. And he came out from under the horse. He walked over to the webbing, and he pulled out his wallet. He reached in. He took out 100. He said, here, get me some. I said, okay. So we were down. But and with all these, with all these omens, how could he lose? There's no way to lose. The other funny story that hooks up, it's intertwined with me talking about the simulcasting and the racing not being available. I was living in Laguna Niguel, working for Corey Black, and Corey was in New York riding Flying Continental in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and the race was over. I knew time-wise the race was over, so I called the press box at Santa Anita, talked to Steve Schuline, former publicity guy at Santa Anita. I said, did you get the results from New York? That's how we used to get the results. He said, yeah, you won. I said, oh, unbelievable. That's great. So the race was coming on. I don't even think it was ESPN. I think it was ABC or it was on television later on, like at 6 o'clock or whatever, 5 o'clock, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I fixed myself this lovely glass of vodka in the rock. I put it down on the nightstand. I sit back in bed and I'm watching the TV and I'm watching the race. And I want to tell you, Steve, at no point did this horse look like he's going to win. He's not going to win. You've got, I forget who the horse was. Cordero's in front. And Corey's second, with coming at him second, but, you know, like still back on Flying Continental. And as they're running the race, as the race is playing, I'm thinking to myself, how's this horse going to win? He didn't win. Why would this guy tell me he won? He didn't win. What did I ever do to this guy? I'm running through my mind why this guy was. This is not a funny joke. If this is a joke, it's not funny. And here he is down the stretch. He's battling with Cordero. And I'm looking, Cordero's in the lead. You don't have to get beat New York on the lead. Come on, it's a stake race. I forget what grade it was. Grade one, grade two, whatever.
It's grade one.
And then here is Corey got up and won the race. Flying Continental won it. And I said, whew, I can't. You know, I mean, and it wasn't even really that close, I don't think. I think he won by a length.
He won by a neck.
Oh, neck.
Neck. Okay.
But, you know, through the whole thing, I'm thinking, through the whole race, I'm thinking, this horse didn't win. How's he going to win from there? He didn't. Anyway, it was a, you know, and again, Jay Robbins, who brought us back-to-back Breeders' Cup victories, with, come on, Stevie, give me a name.
With Tisnell.
Tisnell, with Chris McCarron aboard, and, you know, Jay was just a really, really good trainer. And Corey was
I figured out why you didn't win the big bet and why he didn't win the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Okay, I'll bite. Why?
He's owned by Jack Kent Cook. Redskin owner's not. How are you going to win with a Redskin owner? It just doesn't equate. In fact, I'm surprised they even gave you the mount.
Well, hold your horses there a second. Because if you remember, he also owned a fabulous Forum in the Los Angeles Lakers. And at that time, I was California-based. So I thought I had a little something on my side. Of course, he sold the Forum and the Lakers to Jerry Buss, who also owned horses and loved to play the races. He was at the the satellite wagering facility in Del Mar all the time. I saw him there all the time. And his son Jimmy was a trainer at Santa Anita for several years. So there was I've seen daughter Jeannie Buss, who I don't know exactly what her title is with the Lakers. She still owns pieces of horses, I believe. I think I've seen her name. Anyway, but I get your point. Well, Jack Kent Cook, Redskin owner, I know.
Jack Kent Cook. Well, they could use. Let me tell you, that football club could use him now. Johnny,
gonna, what do you mean? They got Carson Wentz. What else do you need?
Johnny, glad to connect, and we'll look forward to Belmont action next week. And field still holding fast at about 9 or 10. We'll know more, and we'll.
This is a great day to remember all of the men, women, servicemen and women that died in battle to make our country as wonderful as it is. And anyone who's lost a member of the family to armed services, thank you for your sacrifice. My family, my grandfather served in World War II. My father didn't, and I missed all the wars. But I know how fortunate we are that those people gave their lives for our country. And hopefully we don't have to do it again. But who knows? And I know we celebrate today, we celebrate their lives, and then as an offshoot of that, there's racing. And today, with the double carryover at Belmont, and then you've got the mandatory payoff at Santa Anita. So this is a perfect opportunity for me to lose a big bundle of money.
Yeah, the sequence in California, and it's got two of the stakes are part of it, and here in New York, this is I think Nick is joining us next to walk through it with me, and it feels like this is approachable. This sequence, I'm anxious to see what Nick's thoughts are, but honestly, I thought the one the other day was approachable Saturday, and I was gone after the second.
I love when you say they're approachable. Yeah, you can put your ticket together and put your money in. It doesn't mean anything. They're approachable. they just won't shake your hand. They're approachable. You can go up to them, but they won't talk to you.
Well, exactly. Alligators. Technically, alligators are approachable. You can approach them.
Yes, they're approachable. I know what you mean, and I looked at enough bench looking at New York, but it is. It's approachable. And then there were a couple of bumps in the road there. I think the last race is particularly a little fishy for me. And then I had another race that was a little fishy for, I'm a little squeamish on a couple. So I'll be listening to Nick. I want to hear his opinion as I fine-tune my ticket.
Your own ticket. Johnny D, everybody. XB Johnny D. Johnny, enjoy the afternoon. I will talk to you next week.
Stevie, enjoy the grandchildren. Have a great final day of this holiday. And thanks for having me on your show.
It's please, making up for lost time. Johnny D, everybody. We got about 20 minutes to fill out, and we'll fill it with Nick Tamaro and Hammer. I'm embarrassed. We're late starting with Nick Luck. And then Nick, I couldn't believe Nick. Nick was incredibly generous. We spent a good, 35, 40 minutes on Lester Piggott, and then another 25 minutes on the Oaks and Darby on Friday and Saturday. And we also got his interesting, or as he described it, roundabout feelings regarding Derby. So that was a surprising hour with Nick Luck. And we have the other Nick. We start and end with Nick's. Nick Tamaro, good morning.
Could be a lot worse. Good morning.
Exactly.
How you doing?
Exactly. I'm good. I I want to get some opinions on this sequence because I thought at a first glance, I haven't finalized, but I am interested in your opinion, of course, because you may have some alternate views. This thing probably is gonna top what ship approach 400,000.
Yeah, there's a lot of picture play that's going to get really geared towards Santa Anita today, but I think people that prefer more conventional approach and not chasing rainbows will be at Belmont, which is a state bred card, which means that there's a lot of familiar horses in the stakes races, so I think it's approachable in that sense. So, yeah, I would imagine 5-6 times the carryover seems pretty feasible, although I would say that the pools have been bigger than I thought lately, so I wouldn't be surprised if it drifts toward that.
All right, cool. All right, let's get into it. And we're starting in the fifth with an allowance, and it's a good allowance.
It is a good allowance. Yeah, this is a pretty solid group, all things considered. And, of course, the stakes races are split up a little bit, with one of them being the second. The rest are the sixth through ninth. You know, the debut effort of number four, Rome, was really eye-catching. Got a great ride from Trevor McCarthy to win the opening race of the meet back on the 28th of April, slipped up the inside and ended up getting the job done at 7-1. I'm not certain that she's not a threat right back. This is a tremendous Gallagher sub pedigree out of sight, who has not always been the greatest New York bred, but she did come right back and break her maiden next time out, sitting on top of a pretty hot pace. I thought she kind of franked the form from that race a little bit. Waterville is the horse to beat, in my opinion. I think if you use those three, you're probably going to find the winner. I didn't really see anybody outside of them looking like they had a big chance, and I think that their running styles kind of complement each other properly as well.
You know, and it's funny when you say that about Room, because you had the same thing to say about Shardy Party on Friday, and you couldn't have been more right.
Yes, agreed.
All right, so that gets us through the first leg. Now we get to the first of the stakes. It's the one-turn critical eye. This is the fairly new distaff that was added to this card in recent years. And pack of seven in here.
You know, and we have a couple of horses in here like Banksting and Make Mischief that have shown pretty serious ability, especially of late. Make Mischief, of course, is grade one placed, having run third in the Acorn last year. Maiden Beauty's run well against open company. Just goes to the overall quality of the New York breds. Make Mischief's best races are simply better than everybody else's best races. And I'm referring to her, not only her two other than Win Two Starts Back, but her Empire Distaff effort, her Fleet Indian, her Acorn. One of the things that's common amongst a number of those races is that they were around one turn. And I think she's most effective at a one-turn mile. She really figures to get a good trip on the outside stalking. I know it's been a particularly tough year at some of the bigger tracks for Mark Cassie, but she's positioned really well on the outside with confirmed speed in there, like Mashney Girl and Lauban on a Prayer. I think she gets the right kind of setup. And Banksting has to run her very best race to win. I know she out-finished Make Mischief last time out. That had a lot to do with where they were respectively early, as Make Mischief was on much more of the chase in what ended up being a pretty fast-paced race. So I think that that Make Mischief exacts a little revenge and takes this race.
Enough of an edge here to potentially single for budgets?
I think so. I think if you find yourself a little spready in the back end of it, I think she's a decent single. I think if you can afford to use Banksting as a backup, the only other horse I'd really entertain as a backup would probably be Maiden Beauty, but boy, it's tough to envision a scenario where she wires this field, Steve. I just don't think she's going to get loose, and I think to run her best race, she really needs that, so she seems just a little far-fetched to me. I think when push comes to shove, the 7 is enough, the 7-4 if you can afford it.
Very good. Third leg in here is the Bowery. These are the 3-year-old fillies, and they're going to go 7. There's 8 of them, and Yo Cuz is the even money favorite, but boy, after that fiasco at 30 cents in the stallion race, she's a little tough to take.
Yeah, a little more than a little, in fact. But I think what the last race, stumble aside, kind of confirmed was that all of us felt like her wins in the Maddie Mae and the Eastview were courtesy of just getting sort of ridiculously easy leads against what looked like vastly inferior competition, and she was the quintessential dressed-up horse coming into that New York Stallion event last time out that, quite honestly, she was supposed to win, and she didn't, and now you're going to have to take a short-ish price on a horse that has some real knocks, and I think she's going to get plenty of pace, a battle on the front end between November Rain and Adversity. I think that'll work against her, and you can also take Liberty Flame out of here, so I think it's going to end up being a field of seven. Liberty Flame ran on Saturday. I know she might not be good enough. I'm still intrigued by Sterling Silver. I still like the cutback. I know that she's a horse who was very opportunistic when she won on January 22nd. She rode the best part of the track. So there's obviously a lot of clear knocks, but I have to try a cutback like this. It just goes against my grain to not use her. And Tom Alvertrani was just a little too ambitious with her running her in the Busher and then the Ashland, I guess, hoping that maybe he could get some graded black type or something like that. This is a much more realistic spot. I will admit, I do think November Rain's going to run a big race. I think she's going to get a very good setup. I think she's capable of sitting on the inside, which will put her in a dangerous position if they want to go hard in front of her. And if you get a battle between Yokuz and Adversity, then she might just sit the Garden Trip right in behind them. One other horse that I think is worthy of inclusion at a big price is Captain's Daughter, who goes third off a layoff, ran some competitive races with these types last year, two second-place finishes in stakes races for New York Breds. The blinkers are going on, which I don't think will hurt. She'll probably be able to just sit and make that one run, turf to dirt, positive angle for Russell Cash over the years. So there are some definite things to like about Captain's Daughter as well.
Nice. So this is a spot. I agree completely about Sterling Silver, and we'll have to look a little harder at Captain's Daughter in November Rain. But certainly for those of you that aren't playing the pick six, pick four starts here, so be aware. That gets us to the Mike Lee, the boys' race for the three-year-olds, and you can take out the six, Salute to America, and the eight, Hot Rod Rumble, which leaves us with a seven-pack.
Yeah, the horse to beat to me is Woohoo, That's Me, and I don't know if maybe horse to beat is the right way to describe him, but he's the interesting horse to me at a, you know, that's going to be a relatively decent price. He won't be favored. There'll be a couple in here that take a little bit more money, and that's why I wanted to gravitate towards him. Even with Hot Rod Rumble coming out, you're still going to get a decent amount of pace. Kaz Mike will go, Rotney will go, and I think you'll get some amount of speed from Agility and or Best Ideal probably be a little bit off the pace. Best Ideal is a horse that was dull when he was fourth, two starts back in the Damon Runyon. He came back with a good second-place finish in an allowance race, but Anejo dropped his buyer 10 points yesterday in a poor performance. So that's a bit of a concern. It also has to make you wonder if Best Idea is a horse that needs LASIK. So that's why I'd probably take more of a wait-and-see approach with him. I'm going to focus on the 4 and 9. I would use Rotney prominently as a backup as well and probably relegate the likes of Kaz Mike and Best Idea to that third tier.
All right, so the 4 and the 9 with a little 5 gets us to the Kingston, and this is a very familiar group of the state-bred turfers.
Yeah, you know, and when Mike Maker has been cautious, I guess you could say, or conservative with some like it Hot Brown and run him against New York Breds, it's paid off. He's won the Mohawk 2 years in a row. He is absolutely the lone speed in this race, and I just don't know how anybody's going to give him any trouble on the front end. With it being a mile and a 16th on the inner also, which is just a horrendous configuration for a stakes race, he has such an enormous advantage, Steve, and that's what I can't get past. The other thing is that, you know, some of the hard-hitting New York Breds that we've seen in years past, they don't really, this is not their ideal setup. Therapist wants to go shorter. He's ineffective at a mile and a 16th. And Cross Border looks like he might be getting a little long in the tooth. Sanctuary City is a horse who seemingly never runs poorly. But he's just way up against it pace-wise, right? That was my big concern with him, and he's a horse who I think is so embraceable. You know, as I said, it's really easy to root for him because he always fires, but on the Widener with an additional speed horse, he'd be a great bet because he's a horse who really never takes money either. But I think he's probably more of a placing chance than anything else, and I think if you're going wide in some other legs, this is where you probably single some like it Hot Brown and maybe one backup of the horse that you like best. I would probably use Sanctuary City, but I'm not going to spend a lot of money trying to beat or help out someone like an Hod Brown.
Well, and I suppose the other horse to even just at least mention with the switch back to Rosario is City Man, who Rosario has gotten the most out of whatever speed he can generate.
Yeah, you know, and in looking at this race, one of the things that you notice about City Man is that Christophe Clement often seems rather reticent to use City Man's speed, and he, it would really behoove them to put City Man forward and get him in a, you know, maybe in the second spot behind Some Like It Hod Brown, even if he gets inside with a little cover. You know, should Some Like It Hod Brown not show up with his best fastball, then there's a decent chance that he'd be in line to benefit. So I agree. Hopefully Rosario is willing to put him a little bit more in the game. The effort two starts back, albeit against it was against Open Company. I don't know how much tougher that Open Company race was than this one. It was very, very good.
Gets us to a state bred. They're all state breds today. Big Apple Showcase Day. And 7 furlongs, maiden special for fillies and mares. And there's a lot going on in here, including firsters and surface switches and all kinds of hazarai.
Yeah, there's a lot going on for sure. Queen of Lies is a horse who I thought ran well last time out in her turf debut. She's bred big time for the turf on the dam side, and I thought she got kind of a, I don't exactly know what the right word is, maybe an inconsistent trip in that she was chasing, and then she seemed really hesitant to be on the inside. So Kendra kind of steadied her a little bit. She moved outside. She ran on. It doesn't look like it was a strong race on paper, though, and I do think that the effort for number 12, Crosstalk, was probably better. Now getting into Dave Duggan's care, I'm a huge Dave Duggan fan. This is an excellent New York-bred pedigree on the dam side, including the talented Not a Peep, who was a good horse for Tom Bush years ago. So I think Crosstalk still has a pretty decent amount of potential forward moves in her. There are a couple of decent pedigrees in here. The 6 Celebrity News is bred for the lawn, as is the 5 Latest Edition. So either one of those makes sense. I think Sinfully Sweet is a horse that you'd want to include as well. Her best turf races make her competitive. And, you know, barring anything changing big time with the scratches, were there, did any of the 13, 14, or 15 get in?
The 13, Gary got in with Dream Central.
Got in. Yeah, and that horse is not without chance. I actually thought his last race was pretty solid. And though the Bug Boy, her last race, I should say, though the Bug Boy's not had any trouble on the turf, Cancella's an upgrade sprinting on the turf, I'd say, with an off-the-pace type. Gomez is at his best going forward. I'd probably include Dream Central as a backup.
Well, I want to mention a horse I think that is absolutely part of this, and that's Bavarian Cream, the Mark Hennig. And I know Hennig has struggled so far at the meet, but what's wrong with Bavarian Cream being a Bayern four-year-old, too? I thought 6-1, I'm interested.
Yeah, there's some pedigree there as well. No argument from me, and Lascano generally better with front-running types on the turf than the average bear, so I have no argument either.
This is a really good sequence. It's going to only enhance a long, fun day of Memorial Day racing. Nick, give us a snapshot, too, of the Lone Star action. You're going to compete today, right, for one of those seats?
Yes, going to compete at Lone Star in the Lone Star Million Betting Challenge. Really good card. Much better weather than the situation was here last year when a deluge came in and knocked everything off the turf. But the centerpiece is the Steve Sexton Mile, which goes as race number 12 on the elongated card. I can let everybody know that you can scratch the 5 Elector out of there who didn't make the trip. But it's a really interesting and eclectic bunch of horses, including the venerable 9-year-old gelding rated R superstar. Mish is coming in for Safi Joseph Jr. off of a couple of wins at Gulfstream in really impressive fashion. Shaz is in for Sean McCarthy, who, of course, was a flashy debut winner back on opening day at Santa Anita. I like rated our superstar and Sheriff Brown. I'm going to play for a bit of a collapse. I'm going to use a little bit of popular kid as well for Sean Davis, who looked for a second like he might upset the Razorback at a huge price. The pick 5 is really approachable to me because the 10th and 11th are races where you can go very thin. Park Avenue in the 10th has a huge pace edge in the Ouija board distaff. And the 11th is the Texas Derby, where the 7 and 8, Cover Me Up, and AP Secret look like the main two. But really good action at Lone Star today. A lot of stakes races. Should be a lot of fun.
You know, you mentioned that 10th race, and there was a horse that caught my eye that looked to me like a bit of an overlay and does have a little bit of speed to sit close. 8-1 on Island Hideaway? I'm interested.
Yeah, she was a really solid winner, two starts back at Sam Houston. It was one of those where I was looking through the binoculars, and I hadn't used her in any of my multi-race plays, and was like, oh, damn, she's going to win when they were going into the turn. But, yeah, she ran really well for Broberg and Rye Eccleberry. And Rye is very astute when it comes to riding the front end. So what I'm figuring is that he's just going to make Victor Espinosa's job a little bit tougher. I don't think he'll want to go out and hook Park Avenue. But if she has to work a little harder to get to that first turn, it could soften her up a bit late.
The action at Lone Star and the all stakes pick five starts with the eighth at 6:22. Nick, good luck in the contest. Thanks for the look at Belmont, and we'll be watching that leaderboard. Trey Stiles has been tearing it up for the first 2 days of the contest, hanging around too. So it should be a really fun day. Brandon Lee holding court and taking care of everybody at Lone Star today.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
NTAM 1215 on his way to Grand Prairie, and I hope you're on your way to a wonderful afternoon, family, friends, and remembering what the day signifies, those that gave all. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll start to really recap the weekend. Thanks to Nick Luck for a surprising hour. I didn't expect to have Nick for an hour, but it was great. Mig, of course, and Johnny D, Cape May, and Cape May, Johnny D, and Nick Tamburo. Thanks, everybody. Good luck today. I'll have some plays up later, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Betting on. How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.